Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
We are talking through the implication of the week's biggest stories for us here in Greater Boston today, and I feel like I can sum this next one up very well with... how about those gas prices?
AAA says Massachusetts hit a new record, the average price jumping 54 cents compared to last week, hitting $4.16.
That is a tough pill to swallow, given what's been happening with prices overall.
On average, wages are not rising as fast as inflation, so even though paychecks are getting bigger, they don't go as far as they used to.
NBC 10 and then NPR there. Meanwhile, Boston Mayor Michelle Wu hopes that she can do what she calls rent stabilization to help. She has launched a panel to give her ideas how to do it. Here's Wu on rent.
This is the number one concern on residents' minds all across our city, how we will afford to stay.
While we're paying at the pump and figuring out how to stay, we're also trying to figure out who works where. Changing jobs, deciding whether to go back to the office or work from home. Let's take a look at all of us. So join us. How hard are gas prices hitting you? Have you changed the way you shop or drive already? And are you struggling with the question of who works where in your job? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Joining us now, Evan Horowitz, Executive Director at the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. Evan, welcome.
Hey, Tiziana, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Evan, so we do have to start with the pain at the pump. Here is the snapshot from NBC 10 earlier this week in bigger fashion.
Records are breaking when it comes to gas prices, and it looks like these gas prices will continue to climb in the days ahead. Here in Massachusetts, we are up 72 cents in just the last month.
As I understand it, Evan, you would argue we don't really understand why this is happening.
Well, there are a few things to say here. One is I was jumping up and down and screaming at every television and newspaper the other day. Gas prices are rising, and we'll get back to that in a second. They are not at a record. Gas prices were higher in 2011. They have been higher in the past. This is a very high level. It is not a record level. You need to adjust for things that happen over time, like inflation and wage growth. So I do at least want to get that on the record.
So wait, I do want to understand that though. So are you saying that literally the actual price point, you know, $4.17 versus $4.11 was higher in 2011? Or are you saying that in 2011, relative dollars, gas prices were higher?
Relative
then?
Dollars. I'm saying that in 2011, a larger share of people's paychecks were going to gas prices made up a larger percentage of what people were like average hourly wages. If you adjust for inflation. So yes, the kind of raw nominal dollar thing, sure. But that's like saying, you know, we used to go to the movies for a nickel. If you don't take into account the fact that the value of the dollar changes, then you're missing something. And this is something everyone's aware of now because, man, the value of the dollar is changing very fast, yeah. Much faster than it has in a long time.
Yeah. So, all right, tell us why. Tell us, start with either the gas prices or why the value of the dollar is changing. But just, uncomb it for us a little bit.
Two things going on with gas prices. One is connected to the broader issue of inflation. That is, prices in general have been rising fast. They've been rising fast basically because we overstimulated the economy coming out of the COVID pandemic. People have a lot of money chasing fewer goods. That drives up prices. So that's the first thing. There's a general rise in prices, and gas prices had been going up. And then, of course, there's all the uncertainty around the invasion of Ukraine. However it affects the actual supply of oil and gasoline, it drives up uncertainty, and that has to get priced in too. So we've seen big movements in the price of oil, and anyone selling gasoline has to account for that. So that drives up prices.
So I'm going to stop you there too, just because I'm following along as we go. So in addition to actual causes of price increases, because, for example, it's harder to get something, the uncertainty of whether you can get something will also make it more expensive?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People have to hedge. If you're selling stuff and you don't know what the price is going to be tomorrow, you have to bake that into prices today. And, you know, there's always this sense that like, well, just look at the price, then why aren't you paying? No, it matters what you're going to have to pay tomorrow. So say you're shipping company, you need to know what you're going to be paying for gas today and what you're going to be paying tomorrow. If you're an airline, you should know what you'll be paying today and what you're going to be paying tomorrow. So expectations of future prices are always affecting today's prices. And when you can't really predict what future prices are going to be, that wreaks havoc on today's prices. And that's part of what we're seeing.
Okay. So what do we do about it?
Man, if only there were a really good way to reduce gas prices and overall inflation without harming people. But I don't think there is, or at least if there is, people haven't really figured it out. The standard tool for reducing inflation and inflationary pressure is to make the economy worse. And that's actually what the Fed is planning to do. The Federal Reserve, sorry. They're expected to raise rates repeatedly throughout this year, which will dampen economic activity, meaning people will buy less stuff, they'll have less money to use, and that will reduce inflationary pressure. But you got to think of it that way. We reduce inflation by making the economy worse, strategically making the economy worse.
Yeah, that's kind of a disturbing concept. I want to play a little bit of sound. So producer Chris Sitterick pulled a chunk of sound from a Morning Edition story this past Monday. It was the NPR chief economic correspondent, Scott Horsley, and he was asked about how the Fed will proceed, what you're just talking about. And he said carefully, because many of their predictions during the pandemic have been wrong, and that Ukraine adds the kind of uncertainty you've been talking about. And then I want to play this for you. He made an historical comparison, and then you're going to hear him throw to some sound in the answer as well. Here it is.
Back in the 1970s, the Federal Reserve didn't do much to fight inflation until Paul Volcker came along and really tightened the screws. That worked, but it was really painful. You know, mortgage rates soared to 18%. The economy sank into a deep recession. Alabama Senator Richard Shelby asked Powell this week if he and his colleagues are prepared to administer the same kind of tough medicine that Volcker did.
And a lot of it was draconian. Is the leadership at the Fed under you prepared to do what it takes to get inflation under control?
Well, let me say, I knew Paul Volcker. I think he was one of the great public servants of the era, the greatest economic public servant of the era. And I hope history will record that the answer to your question is yes.
Okay, so that is troubling. What you said is troubling, making the economy worse, really bad. As the Fed acts, Evan, what happens to people's livelihoods, their budgets, et cetera, here in Massachusetts?
So to be clear, the goal here is to make the economy a little bit worse so that we don't have to do the kind of thing that Volcker had to do in the early 80s, which is make the economy a lot worse and drive the economy into recession. That's what we want to avoid. So the idea is, let's maybe turn this dial a little bit, just enough to dampen inflation, but without driving people out of work, right? So we've never really managed that kind of soft landing, but that is what we're trying, what the Fed is really trying to accomplish. But still, when the Fed raises rates, what it does is it makes mortgages more expensive, it makes business lending more expensive, it makes credit card debt more expensive. You know, it has all of these pass-through effects on people's ability to spend money, you know, the value of people's money. So people will be able to spend less. They will feel poorer as a result of this because it will be harder for them to take money out of their homes or spend money on their credit cards or borrow. And, you know, that's an effect, and it will affect businesses too. It will be harder for businesses to raise money and borrow, which could dampen hiring. Now, again, this is just a fundamental trade-off. At some point, there is too much money chasing too many goods, and that's how you end up with inflationary pressure in the first place. So if you don't do this, then you could really end up in the situation we had in the 70s where inflation gets baked in a dangerous way, and the only solution is a devastating recession to drive it out of the system.
Okay, so if I can imagine a listener saying, wait a minute, you're saying mortgages go up, I can't afford my house anymore, I can't afford a house now, I can't afford rent now, and the Fed is going to take steps to make it harder to be housed. And I'm thinking about the implications in a tight housing market like Massachusetts, as well as the move, you know, from Boston Mayor Michelle Wu this week, to put together a panel to come up with ideas on how to enact some form of what she calls rent stabilization here in the city of Boston. So we've got, you know, a couple of minutes left. Just reflect on that a little bit, Evan.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible to ever find yourself in a position where it's your job to make people's lives slightly worse in order to tame inflation, right? People's economic lives. I mean, this is a terrible, but nonetheless, real trade-off that policymakers face. And, you know, there are lots of other ways that we can deal with the difficulties that people will have paying their rent or affording houses, right? It doesn't all have to be through, well, let's produce as many jobs as we can so people get as much money as we can, even if it spikes inflation, right? We want to avoid that. But we can do things like, well, there's a proposal for rent stabilization. But I think, you know, I worked on a project with a Senate committee on reimagining Massachusetts. And one of the things that they came out of that project was a proposal to potentially make rental assistance a right. So, you know, there are lots of people in this state and around the country.
So rental assistance, eligible. Sorry, just to make it clear, rental assistance is a rent subsidy, right?
Yeah, so okay, you get a subsidy towards it. There are lots of people who are eligible for rental assistance, you know, money to pay the rent, but they don't get it because it's just because you're eligible doesn't mean you get it. It's capped. You just go on a wait list. But you could make everyone who's eligible actually a recipient of an actual check or a voucher. And that would totally transform the rental market. So there are lots of things that the state could do on the distributional side that are totally separate from what the Fed is doing and that will really protect people from, you know, changes in mortgage rates or the job market.
Do you have a sense of order of magnitude? Both what would the price, the cost be of giving everyone who qualifies for rental assistance? And do you know? Go ahead.
I love this question because we're working on it right now and I can't give you an answer right now, but I think that's like one of the key questions. What is the magnitude? And again, you face the same kind of trade-off. Like how much would it cost and would it stoke inflation? This is just a question that we haven't really been asking for a couple of decades because inflation hasn't been a problem. Inflation for a long time has just been really low. It's been 2% or below for the better part of several decades, but it's back. And it means we have to ask about a whole host of public policy initiatives, what will the effect be on inflation? Are we overstimulating the economy? And it's just a new kind of political question, renewed political question that's back and will be back for a while and is going to be a growing part of political debate.
Is there anything else you think the city or the state should be doing in the near term? You know, you pointed out that in terms of how much of your budget gas would have been in 2011, it was more expensive than now. But I'm thinking if you make $15 an hour and you're paying a third of that for a gallon of gas, that hurts a lot now. Just in our last minute or so, are there other steps you think should be taken at the city or state level right now to provide relief?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the top priority in all these situations is to attend to the most vulnerable. So it's one thing to say abstractly that the Fed is going to make the economy worse and make it harder, slightly harder for businesses to hire, and that, you know, that's fine, you know, at a macro level. But what the state can do is say, all right, well, that means there'll be more people who need unemployment and we can make unemployment easier to get. We can connect these kinds of programs. We can do better outreach for the people who are going to be hurt. So I think it really is a question of targeting aid and relief to those who really will feel the brunt of the burden if the economy does soften.
Okay. And in a sentence, the big thing in economic policy you're watching as a Massachusettsan right in the next month?
It really is. I mean, you played the discussion of Volcker. It really is that. Is there a way? Oh, see, this is not the next month, but in the next 6 months, say.
Okay.
Is it possible to get inflation to soften without driving the economy into recession? It is the biggest macroeconomic question right now, and it is consuming large parts of my brain on a daily basis.
All right. Evan Horowitz, Executive Director at the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. That was really helpful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tiziana.